Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. The American School of the Air is delighted that the first 15 minutes of its half-hour program has been given over to the President for the dedication of the Jefferson Memorial. The regular New Horizons program with Roy Chapman Anderson, coming from the Museum of Natural History, will follow during the last 15 minutes of the half-hour from 2:45 to 3 o'clock. Incidentally, while we're standing here next to the tidal basin in Potomac Park of Washington, D.C., waiting for the White House car with the President of the United States to be driven up along this wintry highway, I would like to mention, for those of you who might not have been listening to this Columbia Network 15 minutes ago, that as part of the President's working day today, he accepted the resignation of the Secretary of Commerce, the Honorable Daniel C. Roper, the resignation to take effect December 23rd. The President accepted this resignation with regret to allow the Secretary of Commerce to retire, to return to private life. The correspondence between the Secretary and the President was made public by the White House less than an hour ago here in Washington, D.C. And now we're standing on a bit of very cold ground indeed, waiting for the White House car to be driven up along the highway for the President of the United States to make a few remarks as he hands the shovel over to an official to break ground to start the official Thomas Jefferson Memorial, which is to be built here on the bank of the Tidal Basin in Potomac Park, Washington, D.C. This park runs right along the Potomac River. Usually, a great deal of its shores are bordered with Japanese cherry trees, which bloom so attractively every spring and which are quite a mecca for tourists who come to the nation's capital. Of course, some of the trees have been removed to make way for the memorial, which will be built on this very site. As a matter of fact, the very center of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial will, when the memorial is completed, will be at this particular spot. There's a very small brass marker. It looks like a large brass nail which has been driven into the earth and which marks the very center of the memorial when completed. It is that over which our microphone is at this moment placed. This, of course, will be a very informal sort of ceremony. A great many people are gathered here on the ground just waiting patiently behind a rope for the President's car to drive up. There will be no music. There will be a bit of a few words spoken by several of the officials. And when the President comes, he will not even leave his automobile. We have arranged a very elaborate sort of microphone stand for this particular occasion. Microphone strapped on a long metal arm which can be swung around, and the President can speak into this microphone while he remains in the back seat of his White House car. It's impossible to tell at the moment, the car not having arrived yet, whether it will be a closed car or an open car, but if this weather is any particular criterion, it should be a closed car. Most of those who are waiting here patiently for the President to arrive are very cold as the wind drives across the tidal basin, not disturbing the ducks which are resting upon this lovely body of water, and blows through the bare branches of the trees in Potomac Park. Now come four motorcycle policemen. You can hear the sounds of their motorcycles, and behind the open car with the top down, the White House car with the President of the United States. His military aide fumbles with the doorknob about to get out. The President and Mrs. Roosevelt, right next to the President, are now here, and the microphones in a moment will be swung around so the President can speak. Incidentally, the first gentleman you will hear will be Mr. Stuart G. Giboney, who is the acting chairman of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial Committee and who will introduce the President. Our Columbia engineer swings the microphone stand around. Mrs. Roosevelt pulls the robe out so that Mr. Giboney can get out of the car and walk around to make his few remarks introducing the President. The President, incidentally, is wearing a soft felt hat with the brim turned down. He's wearing no scarf, but he is wearing a top coat, and underneath it I can see a soft white shirt, a red tie, and an Oxford gray. I was going to say black and Oxford gray top coat. And now Mr. Giboney is about to start. In a moment or two, we will find Mr. Giboney. He seems to be lost in this crowd, which is swarming around the car, which is stopped at the moment. White House Secretary Marvin McIntyre speaking to Mrs. Roosevelt, who is wearing a brown fur around her neck. And now Mr. Giboney.
Mr. President, distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. The Thomas Jefferson Commission was created by an act of Congress passed in 1934. The commission organized early in 1935 and elected as its chairman the late Congressman John J. Boylan, whose untimely death in October of this year we greatly regret. We began immediately to visit and consider various sites in the city of Washington for the location of a suitable memorial to Mr. Jefferson. Dr. Charles Moore, chairman of the Commission of Fine Arts, was our guide and director in viewing these sites. After careful consideration of many of them, the choice of the commission narrowed down to four. Upon the recommendation of Dr. Moore and many others, the commission then employed as its architect the late John Russell Pope of New York, the outstanding architect of his time. Mr. Pope submitted distinctive designs of a memorial suitable for erection on each of the four sites which were considered by the commission. After painstaking study and mature deliberation, the commission finally adopted this site on the tidal basin on the south axis of the White House, a site suggested for a major memorial by the Washington Park Commission plan of 1901. As there was some criticism of the changes to be made in the tidal basin and also the size of the proposed memorial on the plan first submitted to Congress by the commission, the plan proposed was modified, and the site of the memorial was moved farther southward so that the outline of the tidal basin should be disturbed as little as possible, and the proposed design was considerably reduced in size. The commission in March 1938 unanimously resolved to recommend to Congress the design by Mr. Pope known as the Pantheon design, a type of architecture of which Thomas Jefferson was greatly fond. And the report recommended this design on this site was submitted to Congress in May 1938. Thereafter, and in June, Congress approved an appropriation for the beginning of the erection of the memorial. Final plans and specifications were prepared by our architects, and the contract for the foundations was let. And we are here today to start the work. In September of this year, we employed a distinguished landscape architect, Mr. Frederick E. Armstead of Boston, who prepared a plan suggesting the relocation of roads and the beautifying and landscaping of Potomac Park in the neighborhood of the site chosen for the memorial. This plan was submitted to a joint committee meeting of the Commission of Fine Arts and the National Capitol Park and Planning Commission and received the approval of these two bodies on September 29th, 1938. Pursuant to the Act of Congress approved June 3rd, 1936, authorizing the construction of the memorial, the commission designated the National Park Service as its executive agent. Mr. Arnold B. Kammerer, the director, and his assistants have rendered us most valuable service, and we are confident that under their supervision, the memorial will be built speedily and well. The commission has labored diligently and faithfully and with great harmony for almost 4 years and feels that the site chosen and the design approved for this memorial are worthy of the great American whose life and achievements for America we seek to commemorate. We have, Mr. President, consulted with you frequently and have availed ourselves of your valuable suggestions and advice. We are deeply grateful to you for the support and assistance you have given us. We believe that the memorial, when completed, will be acclaimed by the American people, not only as a thing of great beauty, but also as a shrine dedicated to the undying liberal principles for which Thomas Jefferson fought so valiantly and so successfully. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present to this assemblage the President of the United States, Honorable Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Mr. Gibney, members of the Thomas Jefferson Commission, nearly 100 years ago, the Congress of the United States, in response to a general public demand, undertook to provide a memorial in the nation's capital to the first President of the United States, George Washington. There followed many years of controversy, both as to the type of memorial and as to its location. The Washington Monument emerged as the result of congressional action. Half a century ago, again in response to public demand, the Congress began the consideration of a monument to the memory of Abraham Lincoln, the preserver of the Union. Years went by, and a distinguished committee, following the broad objectives of the original plan for the development of the national capital, recommended the creation of two broad axes in the general form of a cross. One axis from the Capitol through the Mall, past the Washington Monument to the riverbank, and the other axis from the White House, past the Washington Monument to another point near the river. In line with this well-considered plan, the Congress of the United States erected the Lincoln Memorial at the end of the longer axis, and it was then the clear intention both of the Congress and of the many planning committees and commissions who studied the subject to complete the other axis from the White House to the river by the erection of a public monument at the fourth corner of the cross. For far more than 50 years, Thomas Jefferson, the third President of the United States, has been recognized by our citizens not only for the outstanding part which he took in the drafting of the Declaration of Independence itself, not only for his authorship of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, but also for the services he rendered in establishing the practical operation of the American government as a democracy and not as an autocracy. For very many years, it has seemed appropriate that with Washington and Lincoln, his services should be held in memory by the erection of a monument of equal dignity. We are breaking ground today for such a memorial. The Congress of the United States, through a distinguished commission, has, after long consideration, chosen this site and made the first appropriations for the erection of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial. In the days to come, the millions of American citizens who each year visit the national capital will have a sense of gratitude that at last, at long last, an adequate, permanent national memorial to Thomas Jefferson has been placed at this beautiful spot because, as the joint resolution of the Congress says, the American people feel a deep debt of gratitude to Thomas Jefferson and honor the services rendered by him. And now, I'm about to present a spade to Mr. Gibney and ask him, in my behalf, to turn the first piece of earth.
And so Mr. Gibney takes the spade from the hand of the president and, pushing very heartily, he manages to turn the first spade of earth at the Thomas Jefferson Memorial. The spade, incidentally, is a very grand affair. It's covered with gilt paint and it's tied with a red, white, and blue ribbon. And now it's handed back to the president. Let's see if the president says anything else. The president examines the spade very carefully, looks at the inscriptions upon it, admires it, but he is not to say anything more. He has completed his remarks here at the site of the Thomas Jefferson Memorial, which is to be constructed on this particular spot at the Tidal Basin in Potomac Park in Washington, D.C. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.